Case number 62603, Clark versus Coast Hotels and Casinos. I don't know if you were both here for the first argument, but the format is we'll give each of you roughly 5 minutes to address the group and give them the coordinates of what this case is about. And then we'll proceed with regular oral argument on the usual 15 minutes per side basis. So the 5 minutes that you'll spend addressing the group does not count against counsel's reserve time. Are you ready to proceed?
Sure. Thank you.
It feels awkward turning your back, I realize. Thank you so much, Mr. Christensen. Thank you very much. Mr. Christensen, are you prepared to proceed with your argument? Please do. And do you wish to reserve any time?
Yes, please. 5 minutes.
Okay, very well.
All right. This is Donna Clark, who was severely injured when the Gold Coast escalator came to an abrupt stop without warning, causing her to fall. And that is in the surveillance videos, and the defendant doesn't dispute that. The fact, just those facts alone, are enough, I submit, that to avoid summary judgment. But let's look at some of them just briefly, and then I'll move on to other issues. Or if you have specific questions, by all means interrupt me if I'm going off somewhere you're not interested. So, but two of the things that the issues of fact with regard to just straight negligence are these. Was it an abrupt stop? And our safety expert, who was in the hotel industry as a safety expert for properties, for the Rio Hotel. So he has an expertise through education, training, and experience in what is required to maintain a safe property. He looked at the engineering requirements for escalators, and in particular, stopping of escalators for whatever purpose, and concluded that this escalator stoppage, from viewing the video, was too fast. That's a question of fact. And it's actually a question of fact that, as defense counsel said, is in the common, ordinary province of jurors. We all know if something is stopping too quickly. we could view a video, and if it stops such that it throws people off balance, that's stopping too quickly. You don't need an expert to figure that out.
Are there regulations that exist that indicate what the maximum and minimum stopping times ought to be?
And that's what these engineering documents were that our expert referenced.
And what did he say specifically should have been either the minimum stopping time? Did he opine?
I don't have that right in front of me. I apologize. But he did opine that this stopping distance was too fast, yes, based on the stopping times in the engineering documents. But he was stricken because he was not an escalator expert, but we never put him forth as an escalator expert, and his testimony would not have been given as an escalator expert. It would have been given as a safety engineering expert to testify about human factors and the fact that whether holding the handrail or not is a significant factor. But just the negligence and the mechanism of injury is something that is in common everyday experience. The Gunlock case cited by the defendant for the proposition that there's no negligence, you have to prove negligence, and they're saying, contending that there is no negligence in this case, is not applicable to this case. In Gunlock, it was a planter, an open and obvious condition that the injured party wasn't paying attention to. What could Mrs. Clark have done differently other than get on the escalator? She had no warning that it was going to abruptly stop. She could do nothing to prepare for it to abruptly stop, and she had no expectation that it would abruptly stop.
Was the negligence then in the sense that it stopped? You keep saying abruptly stopped, and is there a range to where there's an acceptable stopping time? Or is it every single time the escalator stops, there's negligence? And there's certainly good reasons that it has to stop if there's an emergency. Is there, again, I'm going back to that minimum, maximum
right.
stopping
and,
time.
And there is. And that's what our expert was going to testify to, and it's in the documents. I just don't know what those numbers
well,
are
I
because
think he actually testified to the fact that he didn't know how long it took the escalator to stop, only that it seemed to be running at a normal speed and then just stopped. And I think that's what is.
Well, and let's go to a couple of the other cases then. That's on the negligence side of this case. The bigger issue, and I submit that on the negligence side of this case, that becomes a question of fact. You know, what is a safe stopping distance? And I'm sure that safe stopping time. And I'm sure that he would aid the jury with these engineering documents, and so he shouldn't have been stricken as an expert because it would have aided the jury to understand what would be a reasonable period of time for the escalator to stop. But the jury could also, on their own, figure that out just by looking at it and saying to themselves, you know, is that safe or is that unsafe? And that is a question of fact about reasonableness that precludes summary judgment being granted. And that's the Mann, that goes back to the Mann case that they cited. For the proposition that expert testimony is always required if there's even like a little bit of, mechanical involvement in a case. But the quote that they cite from Mann is pure dicta in the Mann decision, because the Mann decision holding was no, expert testimony is not required in this case, which was a surveyor with a building a hotel and their failures in that case. But the only case that the Nevada Supreme Court has talked about needing an expert for is in the medical malpractice area. And that is not even a complete requirement to having medical expert witness testimony. In fact, in the case, which is the Baylor, something like that, St. Mary's, right? The footnote says, other courts are struggling with this res ipsa loquitur idea in medical malpractice cases. But the court's aware that there are certain types of medical malpractice that are res ipsa cases. If you leave a surgical instrument in the body, you don't have to go in and prove with medical testimony that that was improperly done or that that was a harmful event.
But going back to your negligence theory, what is the act or omission that the defendant committed that was negligent?
Well, that's where you get back to.
And I'm not real impressed with res ipsa, candidly.
Okay.
On this case.
All right. Well, so then the maintenance of the elevator, escalator, but I'll get back to that. I do want to finish with the res ipsa.
Okay.
I certainly don't want to abandon it because I think it's actually the stronger argument. If you're going to follow Nevada law, established Nevada law, instead of going off on their other thing. But briefly, it's the failure to maintain the escalator such that it would have a warning or have a more gradual stoppage as required by the engineering documents. So in that situation, it would be obviously helpful for us to have that our expert back in the case.
But Mr. Christensen, do we not also have to balance what you allege to be their negligence as against what appears to be, from what I reviewed in the record, the fact that the reason the elevator stops within, I think it was that 3 seconds, I'm not sure, is because in the event that someone is caught in the elevator, it needs to stop quickly. So how can it be negligence to stop quickly but not to stop quickly?
Well, and there could be warnings associated with it, and also that is what the engineering guidelines provide for. So that would be what Dr. Or Mr. DiMaria would have testified to our expert. Another issue of fact with regard to the negligence side of things that precludes summary judgment is their expert's testimony that this switch was activated by some actions of another rider of the escalator. Because the jury has to look at that and make a determination as to whether that is actually one of the things that caused the thing to happen. And that's a question of fact. Because if you look at that video, the person that they think tripped the switch, it doesn't look like he did anything. You can't see that's actually that's just his opinion based on maybe not a fact that the jury would find. Thank you.
Thank you.
Prepare to discuss all of the four issues raised on appeal, but I'm going to address the one first, which I think is the primary concern here, and that's whether or not the plaintiff needs an expert or expert testimony to establish a case of negligence in an escalator maintenance case, which is essentially what this is. I would submit that under Nevada law, and particularly the Mann case, an expert is indispensable in a case like this because the instrumentality which is alleged to have caused the injury, in this case an escalator, is far beyond the common knowledge of laypersons. How an escalator should be maintained and even how it operates is beyond the knowledge of a layperson. Even if this court applies a common carrier standard, which was not addressed or argued in opposition to the summary judgment below, there's still a threshold burden of proving negligence that must be met that was not met here. And likewise, even under a res ipsa standard, it's a question of law as to whether or not the plaintiff has reached the threshold which allows her to then proceed with a res ipsa instruction. And we've cited in our opposing papers case law throughout the country that holds whether it's a straight negligence case or a res ipsa case, particularly and specifically with regard to not only elevators, but also escalators, which are alleged or were alleged in those cases to have had some type of a jerking movement or a sudden stop causing a person to fall, similar to the claims in this case. An expert, they've held it all across the country, an expert is needed to establish a standard of care and negligence. And I would urge that Nevada adopt and forward its already existing negligence and res ipsa law to in line with those holdings in the states of Arizona, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Wyoming, California, Maryland, Connecticut, New York, Michigan, District of Columbia, Florida, and Georgia. The plaintiff found exactly one case which held opposite to all of these other jurisdictions where there was a fall on an escalator, and that case is highly distinguishable from the case that we have here because in that case, the escalator handrail stopped and the steps continued to move. That's a violation of code, as code requires that the steps and the handrail move essentially at the same speed. In that particular case, the defense agreed that the escalator had malfunctioned. We don't have that here. In this case, the steps and the handrail, the whole escalator shut down. And the only issue or the only evidence before the court below as to what caused that escalator to come to a stop was that the pressure switch was contacted inadvertently by another passenger and brought it to a stop. And that expert on the defense side said this immediate stop when the pressure switch was activated is exactly what the escalator was designed to do and it operated properly and within the code. And this is really the critical issue to the determination of both the motion for summary judgment and whether expert testimony is necessary in a case like this. And I think it goes to some of the questions that you posed to plaintiff's counsel. Mr. DeMaria, the plaintiff's expert who was stricken, testified that he was not even aware that there were these pressure switches behind the skirt panels of the escalator. And the reason that those switches are present and how they function is critical to the negligence claim because those skirt switches, the skirt is the metal panel that remains stationary while the steps run up and down. And these switches are in the exact transition point where someone is most likely to get caught or pinched, finger if a kid falls, toe, shoes, lady's skirt, anything that gets in that area, it's most likely to be caught or stuck where that transition goes from a horizontal to a vertical rise. Right in that corner is the critical point. That's why the code, the escalator code, requires these switches to be behind those panels, because if the escalator doesn't come to an immediate stop when an entrapment occurs there, could be a devastating effect. We've seen cases across the country, loss of toes, loss of fingers, obviously loss of property damage and damage to the escalator equipment itself. And for this reason, why those switches are there and how they function is so important as to why Mr. DeMaria should have been stricken and was stricken in this case, because he didn't know anything about those switches. He doesn't know anything about escalators. He doesn't know the importance of that. And just being a safety expert is like saying, because I have a law degree, I can be a law enforcement expert. It's the same thing here. He's a safety expert. He doesn't know anything about escalators, and this is a crucial point in the case.
Let me ask you, your summary judgment motion at least presented itself as addressing negligent maintenance and repair. How did we get into this? It was later brought up that, well, maybe it's an unreasonably dangerous product and an expert isn't necessary.
Well, there really has never been a claim that of a product defect and product's liability. It's always been negligence. But when my expert looked at the case to try to figure out what happened here so that we could find out whether there was a maintenance problem, the only thing that he found out was this escalator operated as it was supposed to because that pressure switch got disrupted. The plaintiff's expert never even looked at the maintenance records, and so he never really came up with any opinion other than the escalator came to a sudden stop and caused her to fall. Well, we agree to that. We stipulate to that, and that's not an expert opinion, and that's what Judge Villani made his ruling on. And the one other question I wanted to address that you mentioned earlier was there's no engineering documents. I don't know what the reference is to engineering documents. There are no engineering documents. There's an escalator code. That's it. The escalator code governs this. And the escalator code, as Mr. DeMaria testified in his deposition, provides a maximum stopping distance of 3 feet. And that's for the reason I mentioned earlier. If somebody gets caught in there, gets their body or their property caught in there, we want that escalator to come to a very quick stop to minimize damage to property and person. So the code gives a maximum distance. It can't run longer than 3 feet, but it does not give a minimum distance. So in this case, for DeMaria to say, I think it stopped too fast, I asked him in the deposition, what's the minimum distance or time it's allowed to travel before it stops? He said, there is none. I said, do you as an expert have a number in mind or a time in mind? And he said, no, I don't. I just think this one was too fast. Goes back to the Mann case. An expert has to establish the standard of care when it's outside the realm of layperson knowledge, which is exactly what this is.
Well, and again, addressing counsel's argument on res ipsa, why doesn't it apply?
Because this isn't an event that can happen in the absence of negligence. There are probably a dozen or more switches on this escalator which are designed to bring it to a stop, as it did in this case, when anything out of the ordinary occurs, whether it's a malfunction of the machine or something like a child putting his hand under the handrail and getting sucked in there. If a chain breaks, it brings itself to a stop. It has to bring itself to a stop quickly to avoid damage not only to the machine but also to persons and property. And I think all of those cases that I've cited from the other jurisdictions say that an average layperson does not know how an escalator runs. It does not know how it's to be maintained, and we can't apply res ipsa for that reason, and you still need an expert on top of that. There was some suggestion in either the opening brief or the reply brief that talked about, well, maybe this switch was too sensitive. That was never mentioned by the expert. The expert never offered an opinion that this switch is too sensitive. And that's something that you can't just put before a jury and make that argument with no evidence. Again, comes back to what is the standard for how sensitive that switch should be. There is no standard, and there is no expert testimony that switch was set inappropriately. I would also suggest that the plaintiff was aware of the need for an expert in a case like this, because that's why she moved to reopen discovery after her expert was stricken, so that she could get another expert. That's basically all that I had to say in my notes. If you want me to address the issue of amending the complaint, I'm happy to do that. I don't really think that's why you called us here today, but the plaintiff sought to amend her complaint well after a year and a half that the statute had run to name Nevada Elevator, the maintenance company, as an extra defendant in the case. She did not follow the Nuremberger procedure as far as how she pled the RODO paragraph, and she did not move promptly, as she was aware for a year and a half that Nevada Elevator had some role in the case, and yet she didn't move to amend promptly. And I would submit that it really doesn't even matter, because if Nevada Elevator was a named defendant in this case, we would still be here on the same argument. There's simply no evidence.
What do you do with the Foster versus Costco case, which was the pallet on the aisle? And I think Mr. Christensen's argument is that elevators travel at a given rate of speed. They create expectations in their users. And this one stopped so abruptly that it was way out of the norm. And he's proving that by looking at a video. And for those in the world who are experienced in riding escalators, this was so far out of the norm that it was not to be anticipated. So it was like the pallet in Costco, if you will. I'd be interested in hearing how you would answer that kind of argument if you follow my question.
I do follow it, Your Honor. I don't think that's applicable at all in this case. Again, it comes back to there has to be a standard of care. And what is the standard? How quickly this escalator can come to a stop? And that this was all considered by the code. Obviously, there's a balance when the code committees meet and they decide how quickly are we going to have these escalators come to a stop. We have to balance the risk of somebody falling versus a child losing all of the fingers on his hand because he's stuck in there. And the committees of the code, which is the law in the state of Nevada, they've decided we want it to stop quicker than 3 feet. We don't have any opinion or any dictate as to what we're going to make the minimum distance. And so therefore, an expert, I guess, could offer an opinion to say, I think anything out of a foot is unreasonably dangerous, but that's not what his expert said. His expert said, I don't really have any minimum. The code doesn't have any minimum. I just looked at the video and I think it stopped too fast.
But what about the Costco case?
The Costco case, as I recall, it was open and obvious condition, and I'm not sure that I follow your question as to how that applies here. Obviously, we're not contending that the plaintiff knew or should have known that this escalator was going to come to a stop, but neither did the Gold Coast or anybody else. It's one of those events that just occurs in the absence of negligence, which is why the raise upset does not apply.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Very well.
Thank you.
There is no requirement that counsel exhaust all 15 minutes available. And sometimes it's a good thing to sit down.
Thank you, Your Honor. You are correct in focusing on Costco, the Foster versus Costco case, but of more importance is Otis versus Reed, a Nevada case that is almost exactly the same case as we have here. So counsel for defendant didn't have to go to Florida and Alaska and New Jersey and Australia and whatever other places they went for guidance on how res ipsa loquitur is applied and even how expert witnesses are applied in Nevada with regard to escalator and elevator cases. The only difference in Otis is it was an elevator and it suddenly stopped. From my reading of the case, I don't see that the defendant had, that the plaintiff had any expert. The court in Otis found that it was both proper to instruct the jury on res ipsa loquitur and also proper to have the jury find in favor of the plaintiff on negligence grounds.
That brings up a good question, too, with one of the requirements is that you show that the defendant was in exclusive control of the instrumentality causing the injury. How does that apply here?
The way it applies here is the Gold Coast is the owner of the property, and they have a non-delegable duty to maintain the property in a reasonably safe condition.
This goes back to a maintenance issue, but maintenance was the issue because Otis maintained the elevator, and in this case, you need to make, how do you make that showing that there's a maintenance issue here? And that's what
as a matter addressed. As a matter of law, the property owner has a non-delegable duty to maintain. So they can't say, well, that's not our problem because we hired this company to take care of the escalator. They can't do that.
I guess that's where I'm having trouble with this because this, as I directed a question to counsel earlier, This was a summary judgment based upon failure to maintain, and then it's kind of morphed into this whole argument about this non-delegable duty, and I don't think that was argued at that time.
Well, and that's one of the issues in the appellate briefs that it's that are dealt with. That was part of the motion for reconsideration.
Is that proper for us to consider?
Yes, and that's what we put in our reply brief. Because that was done prior to the notice of appeal. So it is part of the record on appeal. To find otherwise would be kind of nonsensical.
I guess the problem is there was no opportunity to argue that before the district court judge.
Well, because the district court judge denied the motion for reconsideration, but that's an improper thing for the district court judge to have done, to disregard that very issue.
But again, going back to the res ipsa and the issue on exclusive control, maintenance issue, why is, how do you meet that prong of the test?
And that's, that is the way it works.
Down the escalator, and some cases in other jurisdictions indicate that would act against you in that particular prong of the test.
Right. Well, and at the very least, I submit that as a matter of law, they have a non-delegable duty, and so they, as a matter of law, have exclusive control of that instrumentality. And there are other cases that we cited in this very situation where they're trying to say, well, if the public has access to it, then that destroys the exclusive control. But that does not apply in property owner-type situations like we have here. But at the very least, it becomes a question of fact. As to what their amount of control was or what their amount of control wasn't, and what they could and couldn't do with regard to this particular escalator. And that requires that there not be summary judgment entered against Donna Clark. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. And once again, I'll give the audience the chance to ask the lawyers questions, or you can ask the court questions, so long as the questions of the court are not concerning this particular case or the one we just argued.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Okay, with that, this case will stand.